SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
There's no such thing as the offseason on FFC.
Something weird is going to happen in either of these two divisions and conferences where we expect a team that maybe right now could be perceived as a long shot that will make a run at the postseason when we actually start playing games.
At the end of the day, I actually believe this is the team that is poised to be that fourth best in the NFC. And don't be shocked, they get into the playoffs, anything can happen with those offensive playmakers.
It's Football Full Circle with Ben Stevens and Joe Lisi on the Sports Grid Radio Network.
Football Full Circle starts right here live on the Sports Grid Radio Network and Sirius XM Channel 159. He is the mastermind of the pigskin. That would be Joe Lisi. And I am Ben Stevens. Only a few days away, Mr. Lisi, from the start of training camp. Yes, it sounds crazy to say, but on July the 18th, rookies for the Buffalo Bills and the Las Vegas Raiders will be the first players across the entire National Football League to report for camp. Lisi, it is only a few days away. We are getting close, and we are getting very excited.
Quarterback battles, too, will be front and center stage, right? We talked about Geno Smith a little bit battling Drew Locke yesterday on Seattle's breakdown. And what other breakdowns in terms of the quarterback battles can we talk about? You know, is there a quarterback battle potentially, you know, for other teams? What about Cleveland? I mean, do they want to go in with Jacoby Brissett as the clear-cut starter? What about Carson Wentz and Washington? You know, Sam Howell is there. He was projected a couple years ago as a potential first-round draft pick. He does get taken later in the draft, and we know about Carson Wentz and his struggles. If he falters early on, does Washington potentially look to Sam Howell or even Taylor Heinicke to carry the torch the rest of the way?
It feels like, as of right now, there are three main quarterback battles we will see play out over training camp into the preseason games before we get underway in the 2022 NFL regular season. First and foremost, Joe, I think the one that will have most of the attention is in Pittsburgh, between the rookie Kenny Pickett and Mitchell Trubisky now playing for the Steelers for the first time. But one that will be very intriguing is, what is Seattle going to do this year? What are the Seahawks going to do? There is maybe some optimism left for Drew Locke. Maybe there's a hope that he can reach the potential that John Elway saw in him a couple of years back, drafting him to the Denver Broncos. Or is it Geno Smith? And if that's the case, or really if it's either of those two QBs, what does that mean for Seattle? Because it's all in putting it into comparison. And of course, it feels like, at least on paper, there's a quarterback battle to round out this list of three in our discussion in Carolina between the newly acquired Baker Mayfield and Sam Darnold. But Joe, I think you would agree, it feels more and more like Baker Mayfield should and will be the day one starter for the Panthers.
Absolutely. You don't roll the dice to get Baker and have the Cleveland Browns bury his salary or at least half of it and bring him in when you did, to have him sit on the bench or have Sam Darnold be under center week number one. Absolutely not. We know what you're going to get out of Sam Darnold. He did showcase a 3-0 record against subpar competition, and then we talked about it yesterday. He fell off a cliff. He was seeing ghosts like he was against Bill Belichick and New England, and probably did see ghosts in that ball game. He threw a 172 and three interceptions against the Patriots last year. So at the end of the day, I think when you look at the quarterback battles, yes, Baker Mayfield is clearly the starter in my opinion, barring a major injury for Carolina. Matt Rhule needs to get this team off the schneid. They need to get to at least 8-9 wins and be a playoff contender. But I'll say this about Geno Smith and Drew Locke. If you're Seattle and the old man Pete Carroll, I'm not going with the washed-up Geno Smith at the start of the year. At least Drew Locke has a big arm. He can maybe channel that. He has Noah Fant there, his former tight end, one of the best, most athletic tight ends, in my opinion, in terms of the NFL. DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, give the kid a shot, especially when you have a fantastic running game with Kenneth Walker, Rashad Penny, and Chris Carson. Give the kid a shot. I'm not saying I love him, but he's definitely an upgrade from where Geno was last year.
And it'll be so interesting to see this all play out, right? Not only at training camp, but in these preseason games. And, Joe, I'm looking at a couple of the preseason odds that we have available so far on the FanDuel Sportsbook. The Raiders and the Jags get things started in the Hall of Fame game on August 4th. That's just over 2 weeks away, where right now the Raiders are a two-point favorite. But one of my favorite betting spots, Lisi, when it comes to handicapping, which is difficult to do, preseason NFL games, is there a quarterback competition? Is it going to be a display in audition for both of those two names in a preseason game? So maybe we look to a team like the Pittsburgh Steelers or the Seattle Seahawks, who in fact play each other in that opening weekend of preseason football, where right now on the FanDuel Sportsbook, the Steelers a three-point favorite against Seattle. Because, Joe, that was one of the things I did last year for Drew Locke and the Broncos when he was in a quarterback competition with Teddy Bridgewater. It was easy to see both of those guys. We're going to play a substantial amount of minutes in this opening preseason game and both try to put their best foot forward to hopefully earn the, you know, pole position, that inside lane, if you will, for that starting job. It's an interesting way of taking the odds into that approach.
Yeah, it definitely is. You know, and when you have a quarterback battle and it's going into preseason camp, you want these guys to get reps. The quarterback to wide receiver relationship is so important, especially in the preseason. So I agree with that assessment, Ben.
It'll be very, very fascinating as we go through more of these quarterback competitions around the NFL to see what the level of expectation is as well. What will it mean for these NFL franchises? We talk that next here on Football Full Circle.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
We're back here on Football Full Circle on the Sports Grid Radio Network. So quarterback competitions are always very exciting, right? They dominate the storylines for a specific team. It's important for that franchise entering a new NFL season. It's obviously important for both or maybe all three of the names in competition for a starting quarterback job in the National Football League. But at times, Lisi, does it really matter? He's Joe Lisi. I'm Ben Stevens. And what I'm referencing here, what I'm alluding to, Lisi, is the Seattle Seahawks, for instance, have one of the bigger quarterback competitions that we'll see throughout training camp with Drew Locke on one side and Geno Smith on the other. You have already said Pete Carroll should give the nod to Drew Locke. At least there's optimism. At least there's an idea of growth, and maybe Drew Locke has some sort of potential left as a starting quarterback in the NFL. But again, whether it's Locke or whether it's Geno Smith, does that make that big of a difference for Seattle this year? The win total for the Seahawks, you see, looks a lot different this year than it has pretty much probably the last decade, right? It's 5.5 right now on the FanDuel Sportsbook, and the over has some juice at -130, but 5.5 is a very small number for a very proud Seattle franchise.
It is, but I'm willing to go over that total. I really believe their young foundation of skilled talent could rival anybody in terms of the NFC, and if we're looking at big picture. Running backs, they got three of them. Carson, they have Kenneth Walker, one of the best running backs in college football last year, and Rashad Penny. I don't know if you watched the kid play last year. I mean, 700 yards basically over the last four or five games. I mean, he was one of the best running backs at the end of the season. As long as he could stay healthy, he's a first-round draft pick. He ground and pound. They could wear teams down. DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett. I mean, Noah Fant. That's not a bad three or trio when you're talking about it. The problem is the trigger man. Can it be Geno Smith? Can it be Drew Locke? The difference with Geno is he can't push the ball down the field. It's touch passes, short to intermediate throws. At least Locke could get you 30, 40 yards in a clip because of the strength in his arm. Now, he can't hit the side of a barn because he's not consistent. But at the end of the day, if you could get 60% out of Drew Lock, 61% completion percentage, I think they have an opportunity to be competitive. And what I mean competitive is a 7-8-9 win football team, maybe on the outside looking in for a wild card. Pete Carroll, in my opinion, is that good of a coach, and I'm willing to bank on him and the young skill players, and hopefully the quarterback comes into play to enough where I can get over this total. So for me, I like this bet right now.
Lisi, here you are trying to highlight why Drew Lock should be the guy that leads you to an over of the Seahawks win total of 5.5. And then you throw in there he couldn't even hit the broadside of a barn. How does that give me any confidence that Drew Lock's the guy?
Well, we know that in Columbia, I mean, go to his career in Missouri. I mean, he was basically his first year as a freshman, he was under 50%, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So, I mean, terrible.
That was the knock against him coming for the draft, right? Like, so that was the idea.
Right, his claim to fame came his last season. He got the rivalry win, or not rivalry win. He went on the road in the swamp as a 5-point dog and knocked off the Gators the week after they had the cocktail party. And everybody fell in love with Drew Lock, including John Elway there. He didn't probably watch any other game but that game in terms of the swamp. But at the end of the day, we know that he has a strong arm. We can't take it against him. Can you just get him to limit mistakes, read coverage, get him into the film room, and then just work within the offense? We know that when Seattle's on par, they're running the football consistently. So for sure, I don't need Drew Lock to carry this team. What I need him to do is get the football to DK Metcalf, something Russell Wilson failed to do. Look at that game again, Washington, 17-15. He didn't target DK Metcalf until the third quarter. Tell me what Russ was thinking in that matchup. And that's part of the reason why I don't think Russell Wilson is going to be that great or that effective this year as a lot of people think for Denver. And I'll take it a step further, Ben. Okay. I think Pete Carroll's good enough. I think this team could surprise some people. I like them week one. Underdog plus 4.5 going up against Russell Wilson. You want to give me 4.5 points with a home dog? I don't care who the quarterback is. I'm taking them. And not only that, with the points, I'm taking them on the money line.
And we got to love a couple of the week one matchups that we have. We mentioned the Cleveland Browns and the Carolina Panthers, both maybe in a slight quarterback competition of their own, although we feel Baker Mayfield will be the starter. And, Lisi, we're about a week or so out from when rookies report for the Cleveland Browns and training camp begins there in Berea, Ohio. And we still await the ruling from Sue L. Robinson in terms of what we can expect from a suspension disciplinary standpoint for Deshaun Watson. It could go into training camp. That will be a very interesting situation to follow for Cleveland, because Deshaun can be at training camp even if he is suspended for any length of time for the 2022 NFL season. He will be suspended for some length of time, but even if it's the full year, he can still participate at training camp. But how will Cleveland kind of work that relationship and work that playing time if Deshaun Watson is out for 10, 12, 14, maybe all 17 games of the 2022 campaign? Will they just say, hey, man, we'll talk to you again next year? What a bad investment we made. What a bad decision we made. But we have to give Jacoby Brissett the keys to this offense, and that's where all the focus needs to be. That's a conversation for another time, but we still await that ruling. So the Panthers and the Browns, they play each other week number one. Obviously, that is very exciting given what has happened in the last 2 weeks and Baker Mayfield hosting his former team in the Cleveland Browns. Right now, the Panthers, a 1-point home underdog. And as Lisi mentioned, on that first Monday night of the year, the Seahawks and the Broncos face off against one another. Russell Wilson makes his return to the 12s up there in the Pacific Northwest. And I'm even seeing that line work a little bit more in Denver's favor, Lisi. 5.5 now, the spread in favor of the Broncos. A total up in Seattle at 42.5, the expectation, a low scoring game. And Lisi, it's interesting that you bring up what Russell Wilson did last year with Seattle, obviously dealing with that finger injury for most of 2021. But there was a thought that after Seattle traded Russ to Denver in that blockbuster deal, that what was next was maybe Tyler Lockett or DK Metcalf finding a new home. That doesn't seem like that's going to be the case. I think both of those incredibly talented wide receivers will be catching passes, whether they like it or not, from either Drew Lock or Geno Smith this year, which at least on paper, you have some offensive pieces to take advantage advantage of. And you bring in Noah Fant as well, the Omaha native and the former Iowa Hawkeye tight end. And on the ground, Lisi, that's where they're going to try to establish things. Pete Carroll, a believer in establishing the run, which warms my Big Ten heart. In Seattle last year, the 13th highest rush play percentage in the NFL, running the ball on 43.3% of all of their offensive plays from scrimmage. I think that number will only go up, and there's a reason Kenneth Walker is tied for the 7th best odds to win Offensive Rookie of the Year at 12-1. It's because he might see a lot of volume this year, Lisi, for Seattle.
Well, I think the thing, in order to preserve running backs, we saw with Derrick Henry last year, you don't want them to break down, right? So you have three running backs in the backfield. If you could spread the carries, now you have fresh legs in the backfield at all times. And it really gives your offense an added attribute or asset when you have running backs that can ground and pound. Let's go back to that Sunday night game. Remember where Geno Smith and the crew pulled it out against Pittsburgh in that matchup, meaning when they came from behind, they ran at will on that front seven for the Pittsburgh Steelers because of the physicality of the running backs and the fresh legs, the ability to rotate in guys one after the other. And when you have Kenneth Walker, you have Rashad Penny, and you have Chris Carson, blue-collar guys that run between the tackles, you can wear down defenses. And you know what? That's old-school football, but it works. And when you have a trigger man that works off of play action, you could put up points. So, you know what? I like them. I'll tell you this. I like the young talent there. The only question is the quarterback, but I like them week one. I'm taking the 5.5 against the Broncos.
Lisi, we got to stop hanging out so much because we spend so much time together. You're almost convincing me that I kind of love the over of the 5.5 win total now with Seattle because of all the offensive skill that they have outside of the quarterback position. What's happening? Joe Lisi's talking me into going over Seattle 5.5. We'll discuss specifically, though, the quarterbacks and if that might hold the Seahawks back up next here on Football Full Circle.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
Quarterback competitions in the NFL as we get ready for training camp, the topic of conversation here on Football Full Circle. The focus right now, the Seattle Seahawks. Geno Smith versus Drew Lock. Who will be the starter this year for the Seahawks? And Lisi, let's go over a little bit of what Geno Smith did last year in replacement of Russell Wilson. Of course, that Thursday night game against the LA Rams where Russell Wilson injures that right index finger on his throwing hand. He misses the next 3 weeks. Geno Smith gets 3 straight starts, and he leads the Seahawks to 3 consecutive covers. 2 of them as an underdog, losing both of those games, but covering a number. And then against the Jacksonville Jaguars, Seattle booked as a 4-point favorite, and they win that game by 24 points, 31-7, easily covering. So Geno Smith last year starts 3 games in a perfect 3-0 ATS record.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it. They lost 2 games by 3 points, right, to New Orleans and Pittsburgh. The Pittsburgh game was in overtime, and he gets the win against Jacksonville. Just I watched that whole game. I mean, that was a terrible performance by Urban Meyer and obviously Jacksonville's offense with Trevor Lawrence. But at the end of the day, even when Russell Wilson was in the lineup, they lost some tough ball games. 2 points to Washington on a Monday night, 17-15, and they lose that L.A. Rams game that they postponed to a Tuesday night where they were 7-point dogs, where DJ Dallas is running down the sideline and he gets absolutely mauled by the linebacker and there's no call in terms of the pass interference. So at the end of the day, you could make the argument they could have been a 10-win football team last year with or without the absence of Russell Wilson for a period of time. I like the foundation here. Here's the thing. You know what you have in Geno Smith. So maybe he's the veteran. He understands coverage. He breaks it down better than Drew Lock. But at the end of the day, what's going to happen is teams are going to stuff the box. They're going to say, we're going to take away those running backs, and we're going to force your quarterback to beat us over the top. That's why I don't like Geno. He thinks his team is a contender in terms of a division title. He's right. Not with you at the helm, Geno. With Drew Lock, maybe, or somebody else. I mean, I don't know. Come on now. Let's be honest. You've been in the league 100 years. You can't be a starter. I mean, come on. I mean, you know, we have to understand what are we going to get and what gives us the best opportunity to win. It's Drew Lock's arm. Do I love him? No, but it's the lesser of two evils right now. Give me the younger quarterback with maybe something to prove.
This will be Geno Smith's 9th year of service in the National Football League, obviously coming out of West Virginia. His best year probably was his rookie year with the New York Jets. He started all 16 games. The Jets went 8-8, a completion percentage of 55.8%, not great. Threw for a little bit more than 3,000 yards, 12 touchdowns to 21 interceptions. That is a pretty substantial number, but did have 5 game-winning drives, which in 2013, Joe led all of the NFL, maybe because New York was in so many close ball games. But from there, it has not been a great picture for Geno Smith. The most games he has started since the 2014 season when he made 13 was last year for Seattle, starting those 3 games in relief of Russell Wilson. So his 9th year in the NFL, you do have an idea of what Geno Smith is capable of doing as a starting quarterback. Listen, the sample size is there. It is very hard to reinvent your career to be more than what you have already shown to the entire league now entering year number 9. However, on the other side of that coin is Drew Lock. Year number 4 still feels like maybe there's some potential. Now, Drew Lock started 5 games his rookie year in 2019. The Broncos in those 5 games, 4-1, 7 touchdowns and 3 interceptions. Everybody was like, "Oh, maybe John Elway onto something here with this Drew Lock kid out of Missouri." Then 2020 comes around. Starts 13 games, all 13 that he played for the Denver Broncos. 16 touchdowns to 15 interceptions. That was the most in the NFL in 2020. And then last year, Joe, plays in 6 games, starts 3 of them, and the Broncos lose all 3 of those games that Drew Lock started. He has a career completion percentage, to highlight a little bit of what you were alluding to, of 59.3%. That was the knock against him coming out of Missouri. A cannon arm, a great athlete, can really do some magical things at the quarterback position, yet not incredibly accurate. And that's not something that generally develops in the NFL, except for a few rare occasions like a Josh Allen or somebody that has that level of talent. I'm not sure Drew Lock does. I'm not sure we're going to see a lot of a difference just because he's in Seattle, but I guess it's that potential, Joe, of maybe being able to think, all right, maybe, just maybe, Drew Lock can find something.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's the ability to stretch defenses over the top. It's like, you know, an incompletion, but a deep throw still gets the defense to think about it, as opposed to a 10 or a 15-yard short to intermediate throw. I mean, case in point with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Why did Pittsburgh's offense become ineffective at the end of the season? Because Big Ben couldn't throw more than 10 yards. That's what you have now, not assessing Big Ben's immobility and where Geno Smith is, but you know what? He doesn't have that strong of an arm compared to Drew Lock. So you know what? You give him the keys to the bus. Nobody's expecting you to win right now. You're 5.5 win total. You're picked dead last in the division. Nobody is expecting them to step up week one. Nobody is expecting Pete Carroll to really lead this team, as everybody believes it's a 2 or 3 year build. I sort of like those odds. I think, listen, he might know something. He's got something up his sleeve. He's a wily old guy, just like Belichick. And you know what? Everybody wrote off Bill Belichick last year. And what did he do? He's back in the playoffs after Tom Brady moves on. So at the end of the day, I'm going to give it to the old guy. And maybe, just maybe, Drew Lock can maybe upgrade, you know, his play coverage and his ability to break down coverage and limit mistakes. I'll take that. And to me, it's a risk we're taking because of the younger players that are there. Defense is always a concern, but hey, you know what? We can make that argument for about 30 of the 32 teams in the NFL.
Two former second-round picks, Geno Smith in 2013 to the New York Jets, Drew Lock in 2019 to the Denver Broncos. We'll see if there is any little bit of potential for either of those two this year. Seattle, by the way, bottom five in terms of total defense last year in the NFL, giving up more than 379 yards per game to their opponents. Again, much of what we have known about Seattle over the last decade is no longer there. Russell Wilson is no longer there as their quarterback. Pete Carroll remains as the head coach, but that defense, the Legion of Boom, pretty much everybody that was a part of those Super Bowl winning and Super Bowl contending Seattle Seahawks teams are now gone. Bobby Wagner now plays for the Los Angeles Rams, and because of that, the Seattle Seahawks have the longest odds to win the NFC West right now at a number that stands at plus 1,500, 15-1, where the Rams are the favorite. It's at plus 125. So I don't think there's a ton of value, Lisi, for Seattle in the NFC West. I'm not sure you would even make that claim, even though you believe in going over a 5.5 win total. Now, Seattle has the fifth longest odds in the entire league right now to make the postseason, plus 430. Is it worth a sprinkle, Lisi, or do you think they go over 5.5 but finish with like 7 wins?
No, I think it's, if you're going to take the 5.5, you take the plus 420 to make the playoffs, in my opinion, because we know how weak the NFC is, NFC is, right? So outside of Tampa Bay and L.A., you know, I'm not sold on Green Bay being this complete team. You know, how does Aaron Rodgers respond, obviously, without Devontae Adams? I talked about Minnesota, in my opinion, being that fourth-best team. But we know about their troubles, especially on the defensive side of the ball. So you know what? With Pete Carroll, the offense that they have, if they can run the football, stay within their scheme, you know what? At plus 420, why not? I mean, if we think Carolina, where Baker Mayfield has a shot, or at least I do, to make the playoffs this year, why not Seattle? You know, Seattle was a playoff team 2 years ago. It's not like they're that removed from that run with Russell Wilson where they got abused by L.A. So why not bounce back a year after last year, a subpar season where they lost their identity, and get back to basics, and all of a sudden maybe they're a 9-10 win football team and they're the last wild card team in the NFC.
I'm looking at some odds right now. I would love to see where Pete Carroll is for NFL Coach of the Year. He is actually tied for the longest odds alongside Lovie Smith, the new head coach of the Houston Texans. Mike McCarthy, which I find so fascinating and funny that he is down there at 40-1. Matt Rhule of the Carolina Panthers and Arthur Smith. And there's Pete Carroll at 40-1 as well. I mean, listen, the Cowboys are the favorites to win their division. The Cowboys are like minus 310 to make the postseason, and they're head coach is not the reason why. 40-1 tied for the longest odds. That should go to show you what people think of Mike McCarthy's game management skills in the NFL. But if there is going to be any optimism in the Pacific Northwest, you think Pete Carroll probably better than 40-1 to win NFL Coach of the Year. I know he's not a new hot young name, but if he can make this work for Seattle, that might be his best coaching job while he is there. I'm also intrigued, Lisi, in terms of NFL Comeback Player of the Year, if Drew Lock could qualify. He's 35-1 right now. That's around the 12th or 13th best price on the FanDuel Sportsbook. I don't know necessarily what would quantify a comeback, but he is 35-1. The favorite in that market is plus 350. It's Derrick Henry. We'll look at that, Lisi, because I think it's a funny conversation with some that might be considered a comeback. Like Baker Mayfield has the fourth best price. So we'll look at that coming back next year. Comeback Player of the Year, the odds to know in the futures market for the 2022 NFL season. Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens. Keep it rolling on Football Full Circle next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
It's the offseason, but it's never truly the offseason here on Football Full Circle, especially when you're having a good time chopping it up with a couple of guys here, Joe Lisi and myself, Ben Stevens. Joe Lisi is the mastermind of the pigskin. We'll be together, by the way, tomorrow morning on the Sports Grid TV network side of things, Football Full Circle, a full-blown Pac-12 preview. But Lisi, in this offseason, it gives us a lot of time to go wherever we feel like on a given day here on FFC. We started with quarterback competitions, a full-blown breakdown of the Seattle Seahawks. We looked at Carolina. We looked at Pittsburgh. And a couple of those quarterbacks potentially in a competition also listed rather high up on the Comeback Player of the Year award market on the FanDuel Sportsbook. The betting favorite right now, and rightfully so in my opinion, is Derrick Henry at plus 350. Of course, the King only played 8 games a season ago, still averaged better than 117 yards per game on the ground in those 8 games, and had 10 rushing touchdowns in the 8 regular season games he played for Tennessee. So if he can play a full season for Tennessee this year and goes off to be one of the leading rushers in the NFL once again, which he did in 2020 and 2019, which was a 2,000-yard season, then maybe it makes sense that Derrick Henry will cash that plus 350 ticket. But Jameis Winston is right behind. He is 5-1, $1.50 behind Derrick Henry. Christian McCaffrey, always listed, it feels like, in the Comeback Player of the Year odds in the preseason at plus 700. And then there's Baker Mayfield, Lisi, at 10-1. And then we have Michael Thomas, Daniel Jones, and Mitchell Trubisky all at 16-1. What exactly is Daniel Jones coming back from? What exactly is Baker Mayfield coming back from? What qualifies as a Comeback Player of the Year candidate?
I think there needs to be like a nagging injury, because that's right. What Daniel Jones had. He had a neck issue at the end of the year, and they said it was a week-to-week type of situation. It turned out to be a six-week type of absence for the New York Giants. Didn't matter. I mean, they had that garbage coach, Joe Judge, there that couldn't coach his way out of a paper box for the New York Giants. Unbelievable how he ran that team into the ground last year. But at the end of the day, I think there needs to be some sort of injury, or like Mitch Trubisky, where you're the starter for a potential team, you then are relegated to a backup, and now you're a starter again, a la Drew Lock, a la Mitch Trubisky. So Baker Mayfield, no, because he was the starter. I don't understand how Baker, is it because he's no longer the starter in Cleveland? That's why we think he
has to be.
Unbelievable. I don't know about that.
Well, that's what I'm saying, right? Like, I understand the narrative. I understand the chip on his shoulder that probably resembles a small boulder at this point for Baker Mayfield, and how he was hung out to dry by the team that drafted him number one overall, thrown out as a piece of garbage in favor of Deshaun Watson. I get that idea, I guess, that Baker now comes back and he could be that guy for Carolina in a new situation, but truly a Comeback Player of the Year? From what? No. Coming back from starting 14 games in the most recent NFL season? I don't really understand that issue of Comeback Player of the Year. Like, if Baker Mayfield goes off, Joe, and let's say Carolina wins 8 or 9 games and might even be in the hunt for an NFC wild card spot at the end of the year, like, what are we going to see there from a comeback perspective? Normally, you think Comeback Player of the Year overcoming a bad injury from the year before to come back and have success. So Derrick Henry makes sense, even though he played 8 games. And then in that playoff game for the Titans as well, remarkably coming back. Jameis Winston tore his ACL a season ago. I actually think Jameis has some really good value here at plus 500 because quarterbacks dominate the awards market. Quarterbacks dominate the headlines, and I am high on New Orleans going over the win total of 8.5 and being an NFC wildcard team as well. And if they do that, and because of all the offensive pieces Jameis Winston has at the helm this year, I think Jameis could be a plus 500 cash ticket on Comeback Player of the Year. But some of those other names, like Trubisky and like DJ and certainly Baker Mayfield and Marcus Mariota, like, they don't really make sense as a Comeback Player of the Year to me.
No, yeah, it's a great point with Jameis. I mean, he has Michael Thomas. I like Michael Thomas, but then I think it was Carver or someone else said, well, you know, who's throwing him the football? It's Jameis. So that'll take away the votes from Michael Thomas if he bounces back into form for where he was leading the NFL in total receptions, what, 4 years ago? So yeah, that's a great point in terms of Jameis. And plus, they have a major defense behind them. If that could carry that team to potentially a 10-win season, maybe second-best team in the conference behind Tampa Bay. So that's not a bad pick. Here's what I don't understand. OBJ. Now, I know he got hurt, but he got hurt in the Super Bowl. So what if he comes back and misses two games? You're telling me that's comeback player of the year? I mean, I don't understand that better. 50 to 1 for OBJ, too. What if he comes back week one and all of a sudden becomes a 1,000-yard receiver? A 50 to 1, I mean, why not? Now, there's no guarantee he's going to be ready week one, but it's not like he missed any time last year. For the most part, he missed more time with Cleveland than he did the LA Rams. 50 to 1.
Yeah, I don't know. We don't really even know where OBJ is going to be playing football this next season in the NFL. It's interesting. Like, I would love to hear either from the FanDuel Sportsbook or who will give this award in the NFL. Like, what will the NFL qualify as a comeback? Like, what is truly a comeback, and how will this award be dictated by the time we get to the end of this upcoming 2022 NFL season? Maybe Baker Mayfield stinks, and maybe Mitchell Trubisky stinks, and they won't be in the running for this, and it will be players that came back from an injury, and then we won't have any real discussion here. J.K. Dobbins hoping to do that for Baltimore. Chase Young on the defensive side of the football, something I would certainly look to for the Commanders, given how prolific he was in his rookie campaign. But like Allen Robinson III, I also thought he was Allen Robinson II, but anyway, Allen Robinson, now a member of the Rams, I think he's going to have a great year, but come back from what? The fact he had a trash quarterback in Chicago for most of his career, and then a trash head coach and Matt Nagy? I don't, some of this is very, very confusing, if you can't tell right now, that Joe and I are trying to decipher what comeback player of the year means. But that's why I think when you look at it, maybe we use the confusion to help us with our capping here, Joe, and try to get rid of any of the names of confusion and focus on the people that are just coming back from an injury. And that's why Jameis and or Michael Thomas make a lot of sense to me, because Michael Thomas could be a top five receiver in the NFL, and he is coming back from a devastating ankle injury and then some off-the-field weirdness between he and the Saints organization. But 16-1, not a bad sprinkle. Or you look at his quarterback, Jameis Winston, the second best price at plus 500.
Yeah, and you know, I heard you say defensive players, right? Chase Young for Washington. How about Trey White, 75-1? Maybe he leads the NFL in interceptions this year, and Buffalo's an AFC champion. What about Trey White? So I agree with you in terms of the players that you mentioned. Again, you can't take J.K. Dobbins because Lamar Jackson, and not only that, Lamar, but you have Derrick Henry. We know Derrick Henry, as long as he stays healthy, is going to eat. So he's going to trump any running back in terms of this award, right? So I don't recommend J.K. Dobbins unless you believe J.K. Dobbins will rush for more yards than Derrick Henry in this season, which I don't see happening when you have Lamar Jackson there. So at the end of the day, you know, I mean, I'm looking for one more guy maybe that you could say, like Trey Lance. Trey Lance is a comeback player of the year at 100-1. He didn't even play. I mean, come on now. I mean, that's crazy. You know, J.J. Watt? Oh, this is crazy. You know,
that was one of the ones, Lisey. The fact that Trey Lance is even a part of this award, come back from what? From playing in his rookie season for a team that made it to the NFC Championship game? What did he overcome last year? What adversity did he come back from? That's one of the craziest ones that I've seen. And that's why it's 100-1 in fairness. But, like, what are we even doing putting him on this odds board?
Here's what I want. I want to know the person that's going to bet that bet. Let's have that person on the show. Walk us through the process of how you place that bet and thinking Trey Lance is the comeback player of the year. But, you know, I'm looking at a couple of other players like Marcus Mariota. I don't like that. He's on a 4.5 win football team. He might not even make it through the year. Travis Etienne is interesting because he didn't play last year, missed all 11. last season, that's a rookie that maybe you look at, because if he is a 12 or a 1,300-yard rusher,
yeah,
fans don't know him. So, you know, right. What? Wow, Travis Etienne, 1,500-yard rusher, I'm just saying. If he does 1,000 and 1,000 like McCaffrey, because he can catch the football out of the backfield, that's not bad odds with his former quarterback, Trevor Lawrence.
And it's almost like a pseudo rookie of the year award for Travis Etienne, right? That's where I actually really could see some value. And listen, Lisey and I, being the college football aficionados that we are, can tell you that the reason, although Urban Meyer is a ridiculous human being, and why he drafted Travis Etienne in the first round when they needed so much more and had James Robinson, I'm not entirely sure. But in terms of the individual player, Travis Etienne, who said, wow, it's good that Urban Meyer is not in Jacksonville as the coach anymore. Etienne said that himself this offseason. 35-1 makes sense because he can do so much. He is such a dynamic back and certainly involved in that passing game. And at least there's that cohesion there. Although he didn't play last season, the fact that he is with Trevor Lawrence, his college quarterback, there will be that comfortability in the backfield. Yeah, I could see Travis Etienne running for 1,100 yards and adding 700 more through the air or 500 more through the air. That could be value. And then again, it's almost like a pseudo rookie of the year where you're like, whoa, look at this splash this guy has made in the NFL. It would make sense from a comeback player of the year perspective. I'm glad you brought up a guy like CMC, Christian McCaffrey, because he is the third best price right now to win NFL comeback player of the year at plus 700. And Lisey, he was one of the favorites last year because he only played three games in 2020 and then only played seven games last year in 2021. You don't necessarily want to see an all-pro caliber player like Christian McCaffrey two straight years as one of the betting favorites to win the comeback player of the year. It means he hasn't been on the field often yet. Here's where Christian McCaffrey finds himself again. How much production do you think we'll see out of CMC this upcoming season?
23 games he's missed over the past couple of years. That 5.5 win total for Carolina, 6.5, whatever it is now, that hinges not just on Mayfield, but Christian McCaffrey playing at least 10 to 12 games. 10 to 12. If he could give you that, yeah, maybe. I'm hoping, you know, because I believe Carolina can be a playoff team. But, you know, that's asking a lot because his body breaks down. He take the pounding, and secondly, I don't think his body frame could take the weight. You know, the muscle, the amount of muscle that he's carrying on that frame is not warranted. Some guys can handle it, some guys can't. Derrick Henry is a legit 6'2", 6'3", 235. Christian McCaffrey's an inflated, what is he, 6 foot, 5'11", 215, 220. He's an inflated 215, 220, meaning that his real body is about 185, 190. So go look through the weeds on that one.
You pumping him up with helium, Lisey? Is that what you're doing? You're
well,
the guy inflating
him up? That's why
you
break down. That's why, I'll just say this, you know, you could Google it. When you take extra factors in your body, that's why the tendons break down as opposed to, you know, legit injury.
So Christian McCaffrey, to start off last year, let's not forget the Panthers started a perfect 3-0, and it was CMC that got injured on that Thursday night game, week number 3 against the Texans. But before that, had an incredibly prolific first 2 weeks. We'll finish up that discussion in the final couple of minutes of Football Full Circle up next here on Sports Grid Radio.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
Minutes left here on Football Full Circle. And a couple more weeks left until we get to training camp. So we're getting excited here on FFC. He's the mastermind of the pigskin. That would be Joe Lisi. I am Ben Stevens. Lisi, quickly here. Let's finish off our discussion on the NFL Comeback Player of the Year Award. And the odds right now have Christian McCaffrey with the third best price at plus 700. Last year to start the season, of course, Carolina started a perfect 3-0. On that Thursday night game against the Houston Texans, on that early Thursday night football game. Christian McCaffrey left due to injury, misses all of October until early November. But the first 2 weeks, he had an incredible start to the year. 98 rushing yards plus 89 receiving yards in the debut against the Jets. 72 rushing yards, 65 receiving yards in his second game of the year, a win over New Orleans. So a huge, huge component of that offense, going for more than 125 combined yards from scrimmage in each of those two games.
Yeah, I mean, he is definitely a dynamic talent and a dual threat, right? And they're more effective when he's coming out of the backfield in the short to intermediate passing game, mismatch on linebackers and nickelbacks. Problem is, I can't bet a guy that has missed 23 games in the last two seasons. Why is it going to change this year? Did he change his routine? Probably not. I mean, does he think that he can stand up to the grounding and pounding? Maybe, but I'm not taking that bet at 7-1. No way. No way. I'd rather see it before he does it, because you're just throwing money out the window. If you're betting Christian McCaffrey at 7-1 for comeback player in the year, you're holding your breath each and every week, Ben.
For sure you are. And guess what? Football Full Circle tomorrow on the Sports Grid Network. Yeah, it starts at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on Sports Grid TV. It'll be myself and Joe Lisi. A Pac-12 preview, Lisi. Get the people hyped.
Can't wait. Can't wait. Jonathan Smith, right? Oregon State. Let's do it.
Come on. Some Chance Nolan talk. That's coming up tomorrow. But right now on Sports Grid Radio, it's The Money Line with Donnie Wrightside and Kevin Walsh.